Aibo. Krishna. I'd like to thank Prabhu Advaita from Veggies for cooking and sponsoring the prasadam today. So a big Haribol. Haribol. And the Gita Center is having a program with Prabhu Saiva Boma on Tuesday, this Tuesday. The title of the lecture will be Bhagavad Gita is a revolutionary book. And on Wednesday, Saiva Boma Prabhu will be coming back to do the follow-up, the universal application of the Gita. And that's from 7 to 9 at the Bhagavad Gita Center. The only problem is there's limited seating at the Bhagavad Gita, at the Gita Center. So all those who would like to come need to register, so that we just know, you know, when we've reached the limit. So all those who would like to come, you can register with Baba Turini or Abhideya. And they'll be going a little early, but you can also register tomorrow. And on that's free entrance. There's no entry fee, but you just have to put your name down. And on Wednesday, that's the 9th of December, Prabhu Mahatma will be giving a workshop there, a one evening workshop from 7 to 9, Srila Prabhupada's Success Rules. And that also is limited seating, and it's a little contribution of 100 rupees. So for that also, you can register with Baba Turini or Abhideya. It's at Gita Center. All those programs are at Gita Center. Tell me, it's Tuesday, Wednesday this week, and Wednesday for Prabhu Mahatma the following week. Yeah, okay. So Saiva Boma Prabhu this Tuesday and Wednesday, and for Prabhu Mahatma the following Wednesday. Okay. Après saman workshop qui Prabhu Mahatma fait, normalement si nous prenons un workshop comme ça, en dehors, ça coûte très très cher. Mais nous, nous faisons un prix bien abordable parce qu'il y en a beaucoup de jeunes, beaucoup de personnes qui paient en moyen. Alors, nous faisons un prix abordable pour qu'ils aient tout convenu. Mais quand on compte Prabhu son billet, ou compte son prochain, qui n'est pas un sponsor, sur une location, il y en a rental, quand on compte tout ça là, pas pour en un solidakshina pour donner Prabhu après. Alors, toute personne, et Prabhu, il run son griha, le saban contribution là, il y en a beaucoup de bon projets qu'il y fait dans Krishna Consciousness. Un grand projet, l'internet, beaucoup de projets, de corps aux églises, de corps, l'idée, un projet qu'il y fait. Alors, toute personne qui est capable de donner en plus, s'il vous plaît, au corps d'un. Zodi, demain, quand, ou même après, quand donne Prabhu, s'il vous plaît, un dakshina, si vous bien appréciez. Ok, merci, Hare Krishna. There's one more thing. We took registration yesterday. I don't know if everyone registered. I'll pass around the board. And the reason we're asking for your email IDs is because after the workshop, Prabhu Mahatma will send you all the notes of the workshop. So if you put your email ID there, you'll receive the notes. It's a nice little manual. Thank you. Hare Krishna. Pardon? Oh yeah, Prabhu Mahatma's CDs.
I have CDs. Buy all my CDs, because I won't be able to take them back to India because they're too heavy. Buy CDs, give them to your friends. If you go out to the table, actually all the CDs are either workshops or series of lectures on one topic. So it goes very much in depth. The marriage workshop, I think, is about 40 hours. So you're getting like 20 more hours. So it's very interesting. And it's good to, you know, if you like, you can get a few extra and then you can give them to couples that might need them. These CDs are also on my website. It's just, you know, there's lots of gigabytes, so downloading may be a hassle. But my website is mahatmadas.com. So everything you need for your spiritual life in one place. Super Center. Mahatma Super Center. Should I change the name? MahatmaSuperCenter.com? Okay, so now I want to have a little discussion and I need your participation, and we're going to talk about paradigms. So the question is on the screen, and the question is, I can't see it. What negative paradigms? Post-secular religious, within and without the Krishna conscious movement, are negatively impacting our marriages. A paradigm is a belief, it's a way of thinking, it's a context, it's information that formulates our attitudes towards something. Right? Just like, let's say, I come to Mauritius, and before I come, I talk to a devotee and I say, what are Mauritians like? And he says, oh, they're very nice, they're very friendly, they're very personable, they're very sweet, they're very soft. So I have a positive paradigm. So I'm coming here and I'm seeing you in a really, can you turn this down a little? I'm seeing all of you in a really favorable way. I really like you. What? Krishna Chaitanya. That's better. So, but what if I came here and someone, I said, well, what are Mauritians like? And they said, oh, they're very bad. They're dishonest. They don't tell the truth. Hold on to your wallet. They might steal it. And so forth. Now, all of a sudden, when I deal with you, I don't trust you. And I don't like you. So that's a paradigm. Paradigms influence the way we relate to one another or relate to situations. So, if you have a negative paradigm about a person or an institution or marriage in general, then you kind of set yourself up to fail. Because whenever you have a negative about something, it's kind of like you start out on the wrong foot. And you basically, like, let's say you want to do something and your paradigm is, I can't do it. So you won't succeed. That's a negative paradigm. So can you think of some negative paradigms that are floating around either in society or in the Hare Krishna movement or in other religions about marriage that might be negatively impacting your marriage or someone's marriage that you know? What? Yes.
It's not about marriage, but it can impact that women are less intelligent.
Women are less intelligent. I say that's not true. I say, how can my wife be less intelligent? She was smart enough to marry me. Defeats that argument, right? If women are less intelligent, then how will you treat women as less intelligent? You know something really interesting? I just read this morning. If you believe something, then no matter how a person acts or whatever research or information you get to the contrary, everything you read and see will confirm what you believe. even though it's information that shouldn't confirm it. For example, they once thought the world was flat, and then one day Columbus took a ship trying to go to India, and he didn't fall off the edge of the earth, which then proved the earth is not flat. Although they asked Prabhupada if it's flat, and he said, well, everywhere I walk it's flat. Anyway, Goloka is a Sanskrit word for the earth, and Goloka means round. So once Columbus discovered that the earth was round, then in the school systems they had to teach this new idea because they had taught that the world was flat. But the interesting thing was that all the elderly people who grew up thinking the world was flat still believed it was flat despite of the proof that it wasn't. Did you know that? Anybody know that? So all the research, the information's there, it's not flat, but they don't change their view because they've believed all their life that it's flat. You want to hear another interesting thing? If you believe something and I give you evidence to the contrary, it will not change your mind. The only way you will change your belief is if somebody you trust gives you that information. Now, we have a knowledge filter. So if I believe something, then everything I read will reinforce what I believe, even though it doesn't reinforce it. So if you believe women are less intelligent in terms of academics, in terms of capabilities and so forth, which is not what that means, but if you believe that, then you'll see what they do as less intelligent and then you'll treat them that way. And why would a husband want to listen to a wife who's less intelligent? He wouldn't, right? So if a man believes women are less intelligent, then he'll shut down when they start trying to tell him something. Because what can a less intelligent person tell a more intelligent man? Any women have that experience? That the man will shut you down? So, I think we need to define how we understand. I once did a search of Prabhupada's use of the word less intelligent, and it came up like 99% of the time as people who are not Krishna conscious are less intelligent. And people who are most intelligent. And then many times you would see, you intelligent American boys and girls. You probably would say that often. So the way we understand it is that a man's intelligence can work entirely free from emotion, where a woman's intelligence works with emotion. It'll never be discrete, just intelligence. And it'll never be entirely just emotion. It'll always be combined. Men can be only emotion and only intelligence. So sometimes when a woman can't understand something that needs discrete intelligence, a man can understand it because her emotions are involved. But it's like I joke with devotees, I say, well, if it's true that men are more intelligent than women and you need a heart transplant, would you prefer to get it from a butcher or a woman who's a surgeon? As of course the answer is obvious, right? Are there good women surgeons, good women lawyers? Yes, of course. So generally we find women are more domestic, they're more attached to family, to looking good, and so forth. And so that's part of the definition of when you read something that says women are less intelligent, it's referring more to spiritual values, being able to discriminate. But my experience is that men in this age are not very intelligent either. That nobody's that intelligent. Right? There's just so many men who are don't have spiritual intelligence. So that is a paradigm that undermines a marriage. What else? Yes. Restriction, When they get married, they don't want to do the work because they're not used to it. He was saying also that people want to get married later because the paradigm is once you get married, then you lose your freedom. Is that the idea? You won't be free anymore. You'll be restricted, which is that can cause a lot of problems. If you enter a marriage and think, okay, my freedom's over, then you'll blame your spouse on the loss of your freedom. It's right? I was so free before I met you. Now, you're the cause of my, why did you have to exist? If you didn't exist, I would be free. If you didn't have blue eyes, I wouldn't have been attracted to you. It's your fault. You shouldn't have blue eyes. Actually, in traditional societies, women learned to cook at a very early age because they were preparing themselves for being married. That was their profession. It was quite simple. So that can definitely undermine a marriage. Actually, anything negative will undermine a marriage. That's a good one. What else? Oh, marriage will make you happy, and when it doesn't exactly work that way, then people want to give up on the marriage. My wife's meant to make me happy. Now she's not making me happy the way I expected. And so I give up on marriage. That's a good point. Wrong expectations. Unrealistic expectations. It's kind of like a corollary of that expectation is I don't have to put in the energy because it all depends on my spouse is going to make me happy, so I don't have to do anything other than get the service of my spouse to make me happy. Right? Your prince charming is going to come and sweep you away and take you to his palace and you'll live happily ever after. Something like that, right? So you don't have to do anything other than be swept away and just receive the love and affection. You don't have to put effort into it. Yeah, that's a good one. What else? Give me a really good one from the Bhagavatam. Marriage is like a what? A dark well from which once one enters, one never returns. A noose around the neck. Like a sweet ball. Those who eat regret it, those who don't eat regret it. Yeah. Don't live, don't die. Can't win, can't, yeah. Yes. Well, I'll repeat it so he doesn't get in trouble. He said Bhagavatam has some negatives. Wives are like witches. like wolf tigers. Witch in the day and a tiger at night. Actually, that was written by a poet. What's his name? What's that poet's name? I forgot. Starts with a K, maybe? Anyway, a poet, famous poet wrote that. Kalidas, maybe. He wrote this, and Prabhupada quoted it. And after Prabhupada quoted it, it says, it appears he did not have a very happy marriage. You know, after a bad marriage, what do you say? All women are like witches, you know, isn't it? Kids are like jackals. To make, what's the point? To not get married? Or? Oh, do her thing. Yeah. Yeah, yeah, okay. It's a very good point. So, the first thing to understand is when the Bhagavatam is talking about marriage, it's talking about materialistic marriage. And in a materialistic society, in a materialistic marriage, then a materialistic woman may exploit her husband. And so, just taking, and he's working hard and she's not happy and satisfied. And then the kids are taking all the money, they always want things, he's spending, then they get sick and in the hospital. So it's kind of an analogy to a reality. But when Prabhupada says, household life is like a dark well, he's talking about materialistic household life. The analogy is that anything is a dark well which keeps you entangled in the material world. So it's not just household life, but any kind of material activity is like a dark well. So that's a misunderstanding. And wife is meant to be object of affection, right? So you rightly said, if you see your wife like a witch or a tiger, pretty much from the beginning of your marriage, it's doomed. It's just we have to take bets on how many years it's going to last, you know, if you think that way. But it's guaranteed it's going to crash. Now, something that we need to discuss also, it just because you stay together doesn't mean you have a successful marriage. There's a lot of devotees and non-devotees who keep their marriages together, but they're horrible because they have these kinds of paradigms. But, you know, the wife can't go anywhere. She can't support herself. There's the kids, so they stay together. But it's a really bad environment for them and the kids. So, technically speaking, their marriage is a failure. But they just stayed together. And if you had a paradigm that the wife is like goddess, the husband is the protector, he's meant to protect the wife, it's all about affection and relationship, then obviously, it's much easier to have a good relationship. I don't think you can have a good relationship if you think that way. I don't see how it can happen. Now, you take my generation, people who joined ISKCON during Prabhupada's time, and there were maybe 5,000 of us, and you see how many of us are married to the person that we married in Prabhupada's time. 3%? 5%? So some of these paradigms contributed to that. And so the idea was, get married if you have to. It's like a last resort. Why'd you get married? I couldn't. I tried to avoid it, but I couldn't. So I gave in. So it's a very negative. I gave in, I did it. And now what's your plan? Get out as soon as I can. Okay, I'll give my wife a kid and then get out. Yeah. So with that kind of paradigm, then you have like 3% survival rate. And the 3% that are surviving are the ones who didn't buy into those paradigms. Everyone else if you bought into that paradigm, it was pretty much guaranteed it wasn't going to work. Of course, sometimes there was incompatibilities and other reasons. Any of you have that paradigm? Raise your hand. Okay, yes. Wait, so we can say it again.
Some parents, in order to put their spoiled brat in the right tracks, they marry, they be a good girl.
Say that. In order to put the spoiled brat on the right track, they marry him to a good girl, and then she suffers because she married a spoiled brat. Oh, they're trying to find a good girl to upgrade him. Yeah. Parents beware. Spoiled brats on the loose. There's another verse in Bhagavatam. Married life is like a dark pit, a deep hole in which people pass stool. That's pretty heavy. Anything else you got?
In both secular and religious, one negative paradigm, although it should be uplifting, is living in the brahmachari ashram. Prabhupada said a good brahmachari makes a good grihastha. So you think that you would develop good qualities so that when you have your relationship with the lady, then you'll be the most gentleman of most gentlemen.
Right.
Whereas I see that a lot of brahmacharis, they don't end up being like that. They either have some type of frustration that's built up over the years. But a lot of them, they're not very good husbands because they're, is it because they're not practicing the principles, or there's some type of...
Something happened in the brahmacharya.
Something happened because, when you travel to different places, some brahmacharyas are very heavy, and they really try to either disgust you, persuade you against getting married.
Oh, yeah.
And then when you do get married, it's almost like, oh, what have I done?
Right. Okay, yeah, that's a good point. So, what Guru Gopal is saying is that if someone is trained as a brahmachari, one of the paradigms is if you get married, you failed. Correct? There are other paradigms I don't want to talk about because I don't want to disturb anybody. But what I can say is this. A young man who's never thought about the idea of celibacy decides to be celibate, and that's really difficult. He's never thought about it in his whole life until he's come to Krishna consciousness, and now he decides it'll be a good thing, and it's really hard. And one of the ways an immature man maintains a celibacy is by being negative about women, because he's not mature enough to be detached, so he gets his detachment through negativity. And so when he finally wants to get married and he can no longer maintain it, he has all these negatives about women. And so it's virtually impossible to have a good relationship when you're negative about something. Right? This other point is, if you think that getting married is a failure, then you're entering the ashram in the mood of I failed. And you're also entering, I think another point is, you're also entering expecting there to be difficulty and misery. And so you don't have high expectations. It's like, well, if I can survive through this, I'm doing good. And if I, as soon as I can get out of it, the better, which is a very dysfunctional way of becoming married, isn't it? Yeah. So what Gaurakopal is saying is, in order that men maintain their brahmachari life, they're taught things which can establish paradigms which are destructive when they enter grihastha ashram. They should stay brahmachari. No, but the people who are adverse to women are the ones who never stay brahmachari. The ones who are not averse to women, who don't talk like that, are the ones who stay brahmachari. You know, how do you know which brahmachari is going to get married? It's very easy. The one who says, I'm never going to get married, you know he's the next one on the list. So any women, if you're looking at a brahmachari for a husband, the guy who says, I'll never get married, he'll, you know, keep your eye on him, because he'll be ready soon. Right? It's the one who doesn't talk about it, that's the one who's not going to, you know, generally he's not going to do it. Because if he's actually detached, he doesn't really think about it. Right? Do you think about something you're not interested in? You only think about something you're interested in. Right? And if you're interested in it, but you want to be detached, you'll think about it in a negative way so you can detach yourself. But if you're actually detached, you just don't think about it. Right? Because if you're detached, there's no attraction or aversion. It just is. Right? So if you have to deal with women, that's okay. If you don't have to deal with women, that's okay. It's just the way it just is. It's not good or bad. It's just the way it is. Then we have the situation, which is really funny, where a very beautiful woman will come to the temple, and she's coming every day, coming every morning, or maybe she moves in the temple. And then one brahmachari says, watch out for this woman. She's lusty. Right? Have you ever heard that one? Watch out, she's lusty. So who's lusty, her or him? He's seeing his lust, and he's lusting after her. He's attracted to her, and he's saying she's lusty. So you have this kind of dysfunction going on. And an actual brahmachari ashram is traditional brahmachari ashram trains young men for the rest of their life. They don't train them to be brahmacharis their entire life. They train them in occupations and how to be grihasthas and so forth. And one of the paradoxes is that someone will say, you can't train brahmacharis to be grihasthas, because that's kind of like pushing them into the grihastha ashram, and some men may want to be single. But the reality is, most men don't, so then they don't get the training. And the other aspect is, if a man doesn't want to get married, if he's actually brahmachari, it doesn't matter if he learns about grihastha life. Because when he learns about grihastha life, all it will do is confirm his conviction that he doesn't want to get married. It's not going to push him and make him think, oh, I think I should get married now that I know how to be a good husband. It's not going to change him. It's just going to reinforce his reasons why he prefers to be single. So it solves both of your problems. Reinforces his commitment, and it trains the men. And this is going on in one place in ISKCON. As far as I know, the rest of the brahmachari ashrams don't do this. And where this is going on is in the Gurukul in Mayapur. And all those boys make really good husbands because they got trained like how to be good husbands. Because that was part of their training. So, parents, if you want to get a good boy for your daughter, get him from the Mayapur Gurukula. Because he was trained how to take care of women. And none of those boys ever fight with their wives, because they were trained that a man doesn't fight with his wife. They don't. They're very gentle with their wives. I mean, they're big, rough, tough brahmacharis, but when they get married, they're gentle. It's a different paradigm. They're actually not rough and tough. They're very sweet. But they look rough and tough because they do austerity. So we have a problem in that if we misinterpret our philosophy, then it becomes a foundation for an unsuccessful marriage. Which is why I say marrying a person who's a good devotee does not guarantee a good marriage, and sometimes it guarantees a bad marriage. Because if they have paradigms which are unhealthy, they'll come up in the marriage. And even though they are nice people and could potentially be good husbands, if they don't clean out those negative paradigms, they'll influence them. And they'll do things that are destructive, like Gorkhobal saying, like, when they get upset with their wife, they'll say, well, you're just acting like a witch. Which is not a good thing to tell your wife, unless you want to take sannyas. Otherwise, if you want to stay married, don't tell your wife she's a witch. Even if you can quote the verse, chapter number and verse number. You're having, we could do a play, you know, husband and wife are arguing, and the husband's like, you're this, chapter 6, verse 33. And you act like this, Srimad Bhagavatam 4.3.27. Yeah? Isn't it like that sometimes? Yeah, so that's a potential problem. When you become a good devotee, you could become a very bad husband. What about secular paradigms about marriage that we're being affected by? Oh, okay, yes.
Hello. Prabhupada advised that most youngsters should go into Grihastha ashram in Kali Yuga. And also, I don't know if it is something negative or what, but somewhere it is told that women are like fire and men are like butter. So if you get closer, one will disappear. Is it something positive or it is something negative?
It means that if a man closely associates with a woman on a regular basis over an extended period of time, his butter will melt. So Prabhupada said, therefore, you should stamp on the brahmachari's forehead, keep in a cool place. One thing you should, but what, this is just my perception of this, that you need to make a decision about who you'll marry with your head and your heart. They both work together. A lot of people make it only with their heart. A lot of people make it only with their head. If you associate consistently and closely with a woman, if you're a man or a man with a woman, the chances of you becoming attached are very high. Even if your head would tell you this is not good, your heart will become attached. That's what that means. So therefore, in Vedic society there was separation, and then the elders chose who would be compatible so that the butter was always cool. Because if you allow the butter to melt, he's going to melt in the lap of a woman he may not be compatible with. Right? But because this is true, there's the institution of marriage, because we have certain needs. We have sexual needs, we have the needs for affection, home, raising family. So the Grihastha ashram is how to fulfill those needs without becoming degraded. In fact, every civilization that collapsed, one of the precursors was when the marriage institution degraded. That precipitated the fall of the civilization. So, marriage institution maintains chastity in society. So it's very important. So you as a man have certain needs, your wife has certain needs. You do it within an institution so that you can fulfill those needs in a way that you don't become degraded. And you actually become elevated. That's the whole idea. So because you're butter and she's fire, then you can melt in a way that takes you back to Godhead. But if you're not careful, you'll melt in a way that will take you somewhere else. But you're going to melt one way or the other, right? Isn't it? But you can melt in a good way. But I think this is very important, that you should understand, even if you're married and you have regular intimate association with a woman, you're going to melt. So that's why we want to maintain some distance and not so much emotional connection with anyone of the opposite sex other than our wives. Because this is likely to happen. Now I want to tell you something which is really interesting. I know women who had arranged marriages in ISKCON that didn't work out, but they stayed together for 30 odd years or 40 years. And they told me when the marriage was arranged, they had a gut instinct it was the wrong thing to do, but all their superiors told them to do it. So that's why you have to marry with your head and with your heart. So from the head, it made sense. But, you know, he was a good devotee, she was a good devotee, he was a senior person. All the leaders said this is a good match. So from the head, it made sense. But from her heart, it didn't make sense. And more than one woman has told me, I had a gut instinct this was not going to work, but I didn't listen to it, and it didn't work. So I'm not saying that you only get married from your head. There has to be some heart. I was talking to a devotee about arranged marriages, and I said, how does that work? Or how did that work in your family? He said, our parents would arrange it. I would go to their house, and I would talk to her, and they would let me decide if I feel anything, I want to do it. He said, they didn't force me. So they did the head work, so the head part was good, and he did the heart work. You know, how do you feel? So that's something to consider, you know. I'm giving classes now about emotional management, and one of the things is that sometimes we're afraid to feel what we feel because we think what we feel may not be right, spiritual, Krishna conscious. But you have to feel what you feel, and sometimes if you allow, even though the butter melts, you may feel that this is not right. Anyway, protect your butter. Even if you're married, keep your butter in a cool place. Even if you're married, even more so if you're married. Yes.
I don't know if this is a paradigm, but it is a problem.
Okay.
Within marriages, especially in ISKCON, because we have the four principles. So the principle of illicit sex, meaning sex only for procreation, when we have, you know, young people getting married, I mean, it's 0.000% will follow that. And then there's a...
Not even a one at the end of the zeros?
Yeah, maybe one at the end of the zeros. But it's like, then there's all the guilt and the blame. And so that really affects a lot of marriages.
Yeah, it does. So you want me to get into trouble now and talk about it? There's a Grihastha vision team in America, and they have a book called Heart and Soul Connection, and they call this chapter the hot potato, because nobody wants to hold on to the hot potato. So Karunika has just thrown Mahatma the hot potato. So the point she's making, which is very valid, is that this is a very strict principle, and if you take initiation or you want to commit to a chaste relationship with one woman on the highest level, that what she's saying is that virtually it's impossible for young people to commit fully to no illicit sex, which means in the highest sense, sex only for having children, and other than that, you don't do it. So she's saying that's such a high standard, and only 0.0000000, and I had to add the one, because there's a few that can do it, follow that. So then how do you deal with that and not be guilty? And if you're thinking about initiation, how do you deal with it? Also, right? Yeah. And you have to understand that the purpose of marriage, one of the purposes of marriage, as we were just saying, is let your butter melt in the marriage. It's okay to melt in the marriage. That's where it's supposed to melt, right? Don't allow your butter to melt outside the marriage. So one definition of no illicit sex is your butter melts in the marriage only. Now, how much you allow it to melt will depend on you, your desire, your ability. So the broadest definition is that sex only within the marriage is no illicit sex. The highest definition is it's only for procreation. But Prabhupada said there should be no abortion and there should be no contraception. So if you're not able to follow the principle, boy, you're more attentive now than ever. This one devotee, I was giving a class and the whole verse was about sex, and the devotee said the same thing. He said, everyone's going to pay attention to this topic. So everyone is going to fall somewhere in that continuum of only once a month for having children, or having it as a means of enjoyment but being responsible and not using contraception. But I would say, as Prabhupada said, the principles are gradually detached from it. So even if you can't perfectly follow, it's not like you want to do it 30 days a month. You still want to be restricted. Right? Another scenario comes up, which is, my husband wants sex and I don't, or my wife wants sex and I don't. What should I do? Because I've taken a vow, right? So then you have to understand your vow will encompass within the family, as long as you're not going outside the family. And then you ask the question, will this help the relationship or will it harm it? So you say, from my perspective, I feel it'll harm me spiritually. But then you ask the question, how will it help the relationship? And then you realize, if I don't do this, my husband's going to do it with his spouse at the office or a prostitute. He's going to do it somewhere. And when he does that, that's going to start destroying our relationship. So to keep the relationship, I may have to do this with the understanding it's meant to help the relationship and we're meant to grow out of this. So it's something that each individual has to decide. And that will also depend on your spiritual master, because maybe your spiritual master will say, if you're taking initiation, then it's only on 50 rounds. Anything else is illicit sex. Then you're going to feel really guilty if you can't maintain it. If your spiritual master says, well, just keep it in the marriage, that's no illicit sex, that will remove your guilt, because you realize, okay, this is the level I'm at. The idea is, you know the goal is to abstain or to do it only for procreation. And that's what you work for. And then you'll find somewhere where you'll find a medium. And these are kinds of things you want to talk about before you get married. Like, what is your view on what? How do you define no illicit sex and how do you want to follow it? You want to sleep in separate rooms on separate floors and you want to sleep in separate homes? Like, how do you want to do it? You want to put a board on the bed between us? Like, you know, all these things, you know. Because then you'll, you know, the man will say, well, don't touch me, because if you touch me, then I get disturbed. And the wife says, but, you know, we're husband and wife. You have to touch. You know, and there's all these kinds of weird things. So you have to find what works for you. But I think your point about creating guilt is valid, because guilt is destructive if it goes very deep. And then you'll have a very negative attitude towards Krishna consciousness, because it's creating this guilt. You want to say something?
I mean, I know different spiritual masters have different standards for their disciples, and I think that might play a big role. I know one very, very exalted spiritual master in ISKCON, and one of my friends told me that she was talking to him with her husband. They'd been married just a few months and they were very fixed up, like senior devotees, and the husband just blurted out, you know, I'm having with my wife. And the spiritual master said, well, I didn't expect it to be different. He said, but, you know, just work towards the goal.
Yeah.
And I thought that was...
realistic.
Hmm.
Yeah, it's just a reality. In case you haven't noticed, you have a body, and the body buzzes sometimes in certain places, right? The mouth buzzes, it wants to talk. The stomach buzzes, it wants to eat. Anger buzzes, it makes you act. Genitals buzz, right? There's a funny story. They were talking about sex with Prabhupada and abstinence, and one devotee said, Prabhupada, I have no sex desire. Prabhupada said, go see a doctor. So that's just the reality, you know. And I think a lot of times, I personally, you know, I've been married like, I was just calculating how long I was married. I was married 23. Okay, hold on. 39. It was like, you know, 42 years or something, you know. Not to the same woman, but so I have a lot of experience in dealing with this. And experience in life in general. And the most important thing that I found is not what you're doing now, but what you want to achieve, where you're going. You know, what is your goal, right? So where you are now is where you are now, and you deal with where you are now realistically. Maybe you want to get initiated, and you feel like, I'm not ready for that, so that's okay. Or maybe you want to get initiated, and you want to make sure that your guru is okay with sex in marriage is no illicit sex, because that's all you can do. And if he's okay with it and you're okay with that, then everything's good. But your goal is to eventually outgrow that. So as long as that's your goal, then that's what's most important. Because even if you maintain abstinence for a while, but you may not be able to maintain it your entire life, then you can get very frustrated and very upset.
And the process works.
Yeah, it does work. Yeah. Yeah. I was married when I was 21. I've been a devotee 2 years. Right? And I was very physically attracted to my wife, and I asked the GBC, you know, like I you know, I was a brahmachari for years, and it had no problem as a brahmachari, but now I'm sleeping with a woman. He gave me absolutely no advice at all. No definitions how to deal with it. And so it created a lot of frustration because I always couldn't perfectly maintain it. And then at a certain point, I was able to maintain it perfectly. I just wanted to do it. And she didn't. And she left me because I wouldn't concede. So what do you do? You know, these are tough decisions. So you have to be realistic. What works for you? And what are your goals? And what works for your husband? And what works for your wife? These are the things you discuss before you're married. Now, the problem is your husband or wife before you're a potential partner before you're married may say, this is how I feel, and 10 years later, they don't feel that way. Say, well, I thought I could do it, but now I see I need it. I'm going crazy, and if you don't give it to me, I'm going to run off with the lady next door. Because she's got blue eyes, and I really like women with blue eyes. You know, and these are realities we have to deal with. But keeping a marriage together is the main point, right? So we have to be a little liberal and broad with it. Is that okay? Anyone disagree or want to add to this? Are you all in a state of shock now, or what? A little bit? What happened? Somebody wants to say something? Any other paradigms? Yes. There is a belief that
marriage sector must be in age she must be less than the boy
age-wise.
Yeah.
She should be younger.
Younger, yeah.
Generally, yes. You want to hear another one? Prabhupada said marriage after 30 is not very happy. You should get married young. I'm still trying to figure out what he means by that. Okay, so if your wife's older than you, should you marry her? What are your choices? Depends on what your choices and options are. Yes.
This is just not only in ISKCON, but even outside. There's a strong belief that both have to be part of the same culture or same religion. And
right,
how important is that? And
how's it important for them to be a part of the same culture and religion? It's going to depend on the individual. Let me say this. Okay, I'll throw out a question to all of you. This is an interesting discussion. Let's say your parents arrange for you, you were born a devotee, your parents arrange for you to marry a devotee girl. And you're just like, I don't like her, we're in different universes. She wants to live in India, I want to live in New York City. She wants to farm. I want to work as a, CEO of Chase Manhattan. You know, it's like you're in different universes, right? You know, I'm into exercise and raw foods, and she's into potatoes and pizza, and sleeping in on Sunday. It's like there's the only commonality we have is we're both devotees, right? I'm throwing this out to you. We're going to decide who we should marry. Now there's this other girl, she's vegetarian, she does yoga, she likes eating alfalfa sprouts and spinach and carrot juice, and she's open to Eastern spirituality, and you have all these things in common, you have the same degrees. You went to the same university. I mean, there's so many similarities, but she's not a devotee. Who should he marry? Raise your hand if you think he should marry the devotee. Two. Okay, only two? Maybe you don't think he should marry either one. Raise your hand if you think he should marry the other girl. So we have a lot of people abstaining. Yeah. Anyway, it's an interesting question, isn't it? The first marriage isn't going to work out. We know that. No. Will the second marriage work out? Maybe. Maybe not. It probably has a higher chance than the first marriage. But that's something you have to see. You know, maybe you might think, I don't actually want to marry a devotee because they're fanatics. They're narrow-minded. They see everything black and white. You might think like that, You say, I'd rather marry a girl and make her a devotee, or just have her on the periphery. So then it's subjective, right? You say, because if I marry a devotee, she's going to want to wake me up every morning at, this time, and she's going to get on my case because I'm not chanting my rounds, right? And sometimes I don't offer my food because I'm late to work, and she's going to, be really upset. So it's subjective. You have to, you really have to go inside your heart and see, what do you want and what's more important for you? Is it the compatibility? Is it the relationship? Or is it the spirituality? It's not an easy answer. Of course, the answer is find a devotee girl who has all the qualities you want, right? But how many devotee girls your age are around to find? Compared to non-devotee girls, right? So everywhere I go, the parents say, "We have a daughter. Can you find a nice husband for her?" I go, "She's 46th on the list, because I have so many, right?" And the problem is, I don't find that many men that I think would be good husbands. So it's So then what's the girl going to do? She said, well, we didn't find anybody. So are we going to go out to outside the Society of Devotees? Well, we found this guy, and he's, you know, he's really good, and he's a lawyer, and he's got all these good qualities, and gentleman, comes from a good family, but he's not a devotee, but he likes Krishna consciousness, you know. This is just reality. So what's better, him, or, you know, you've got the choice of three devotees. None of them are that good. What do you do? You're going to have to decide. You know, I don't think there's a right or wrong answer. Right? Just like Arjuna, right? He was very happy. His daughter married a non-devotee, but he said he's a great guy. So he was really happy. He wasn't at all thinking it was a bad choice. She's going to go on with her Krishna consciousness. He'll go on with what he's doing, but the relationship is stable and good, and she's happy. Right? Is she happy? Yes? No? Maybe? Yeah, she's happy. So that's an example. I'll give you another example. There were there are some women in Nairobi in the early days, and they wanted to marry, and there was no one to marry, and Prabhupada said they could marry life members. So life member, you know, they're Hindus, but they weren't devotees, but good fathers, good husbands, take care, provide. What if you have a good devotee husband who has no money and doesn't like to work? There are many of those out there. They learn that in the Brahmacharya Ashram, right? So what do you do? Yes. Is it possible to become a spiritual person if your partner is not spiritual? It will depend on how much he supports you and what you do. I've seen that. I've seen a lot of people have husbands, they really like them, but their husbands are totally not into their spiritual life. But it's just one thing the husband's not into. But maybe he's into a lot of other things. And so you're fulfilled. And you know, even if you marry a devotee, it doesn't mean 10 years from now he'll be that into Krishna consciousness. He might fall out of it or lose interest. Or not practice it. So that's possible also. So I think it's the same answer. You have to weigh the pros and cons. I mean, it's easier if they're into spiritual life. But as I say, your choices are limited, more limited. It's something you're going to have to answer yourself when you see what your options are. It's a very interesting question to ponder. Would this be better with this person because there's so much compatibility but they're not so spiritual than with a person who's spiritual but there's not so much compatibility on other levels? You're going to have to answer that question yourself. And I guess part of the answer is, well, it depends who he is. And it depends how much an issue that is for you. Say that again. Wait for the microphone.
Because if, for instance, you try to maintain a good relationship with this person, but this person could be a hurdle in your spirituality.
Can be an obstacle?
Yes, obstacle.
Yeah, that you have to see. What I can just tell you what I've seen. I've seen marriages where a woman is a devotee and the husband isn't, but the husband is supportive. He'll go to the temple, he'll take care of the kids while she's there. Sometimes he'll even do service, but he never adopts it himself. So he never interferes with her. And so in some sense it's almost like marrying a devotee because he's supportive. but he just doesn't do it. You get up at 5, he gets up at 8. You read Bhagavad Gita, he reads the newspaper. You know, it's like that. So if that doesn't bother you, then it's okay. It all depends on... But let me give you an example. Interesting thing is, you may marry someone and you have spiritual similarities when you're married, but 10 years later you may drift apart where they kind of lose interest. So they still have the same beliefs, but practice, they stop practicing. They're not doing the practices that they were doing 10 years before. So it's no guarantee that you marry someone who's spiritual, they'll stay that way. So in any case, I think we have to base the relationship more on the relationship, not what we do in terms of our interests and hobbies. Because that can... let's say you marry a man who's spiritual, and then, or he's a devotee, and then later he kind of gets out of it, and you say, well, okay, let's get divorced because you don't chant anymore. That's immature. If your relationship is strong, it won't matter so much because he'll still support you, you'll support him. So that's really the most important thing, I think, in the long run. I think it always comes down to relationship. Is the relationship good and healthy? If the relationship is good and healthy, you can be inspired in your spiritual life even if he isn't. But if you feel you need him, you really need a man to be into spiritual life to support you, and you won't be happy unless you have that man, then definitely don't do it. So it'll depend on you, how important that is. And you'll have to weigh all the pros and cons. Right? Add up your point scale. He has 10 points on compatibility. He's got 50 points on spirituality. He's got 3 points on emotional support. He's got 50 points on responsibility, on finances. He's got 25 points on being a good father. You add it up and you see, is this going to work for me? Does that make sense? Okay. Anybody else? Want to say anything? Share anything? Okay, so the purpose of what we just did is for you right now to ask yourself, do I have any negative paradigms about marriage? And if I do, what do I do now about them? If you have a negative paradigm, realize it will negatively impact your marriage despite all your good intentions, because it becomes an operating paradigm through which you will operate and through which you will see your spouse. And you will see your spouse and marriage in a negative way if you have a negative connotation about marriage. Another paradigm is, we were saying yesterday, well, the world is bad and you can't be happy, so you just get married and you just tolerate it, and it's just going to be full of misery and trouble, and that's what the Bhagavatam says, it's just a hassle. And so then how can you have a decent marriage and relationship if you're entering it with a paradigm, it's just going to be a hassle and it's going to be full of trouble? And you've probably heard many Bhagavatam classes how troublesome marriage is, haven't you? Okay, let me ask this question again. Has anybody not heard a class like that? We've all heard classes about the troubles of married life. So if you enter it thinking, I failed as a brahmachari, it's going to be trouble, women are like witches, etc., etc., you're guaranteed it's not going to work. 100% money back guarantee. It's just we don't know what date it's going to collapse on, but we know it's going to collapse. You agree? Disagree? What do you think? And remember my point, it may collapse and you may still be married. I'm not saying you'll get divorced, I'm just saying it'll collapse. It won't work. You may stay together, but then you'll give your children this paradigm. You all look so depressed right now. Was that bad news or what? You're all thinking, oh my God, I have all these negative paradigms. My marriage is doomed to fail. So just think right now if you have any negative paradigms.
So Prabhu, I just wanted to ask something.
Wait. You're going to change the subject, right? Because I want to stay on this subject right now. I want you to think if you have a negative paradigm. And the question will come up, if I have a negative paradigm, what do I do? You have to change it from negative to positive. Because unless you have positive paradigms about marriage, it is virtually impossible to have a positive marriage. Yes or no? Anybody alive? Yes or no? Okay, everybody stand up. Please stand up. Raise your hands to the ceiling. It's time to wake you up. This always happens after you eat. Okay, let's bend down, stretch a little, blow some air out, come up, breathe. Come back. To the side. Back down, touch the floor. If you can't touch the floor with your knees straight, that means you're older than I am, because I can do it.
Look at how far I can go.
Okay, you can't squat down, can you? Can you do this? Do you have room?
No.
Okay, can we jump up and down? Okay, what you're going to do is jump from where you are to the seat in front of you. No, you don't have to do that, unless you want to. Okay, so we're going to jump up, and when we jump up, we're going to say, Gauranga. Can we do that? One, two, three.
Gauranga.
That wasn't good enough. You have to jump higher. One, two, three. Not good enough. Jump a little higher and a little louder. Are you ready?
Yes.
Are you ready?
Yes.
One, two, three.
Gauranga.
See, I was going to have you do this. Jump from here, but you can't bend down. Okay, that's good enough. Okay, let's do one more. No, there's not enough room for you to do this. Okay, you can sit down. Okay. Before you make a comment or ask a question, I want to explain. If you have a negative paradigm, if in this discussion you realize that maybe you have a negative paradigm, and we didn't even discuss the negative paradigms that are existing outside of religious movements, you know, like male-dominated marriages, the man's always right, or you will tend to be the kind of husband your father was, you will tend to be the kind of wife your mother was, and that carries all kinds of paradigms that may not be work for you or be healthy in this society. So when you have a negative paradigm, you have to replace it with something positive, right? So what's the negative? Household life is a deep well from which going, you never come out. Household life is an ashram from which you cultivate your Krishna consciousness. You become peaceful, you create stability, and you nurture your spiritual life. That's the switch of the paradigm, right? Household life is the place from which you go up to Krishna, not a place where you fall into the material world. Shift your paradigm around, right? Women are like goddesses, they're mothers, nurturers. Well, Prabhupada said the wife is the man's intelligence, she's the fortress, she protects him. She protects him. He becomes stable. He becomes chaste. Right? You see things like that, then become positive paradigms. And then when the paradigm is positive, you have a very positive attitude towards marriage. Does that make sense? So, did any of you realize you had a negative paradigm about marriage? Silence. Does silence mean yes? I have to ask these questions backward. Did anyone not realize you had a negative? Raise your hand if you didn't have a negative paradigm. Yeah. Right, so a lot of us had negative paradigms, right? Now, do you see the negative paradigm playing out in your marriage? Any of you? Do you see certain things going on in your marriage that relate to that negative paradigm? The way you treat your spouse or your children? Can you understand that? If you have a negative paradigm, you have to connect the dots to see how it plays out. And then you understand, if you change the paradigm, connect the dots, it'll play out differently. Right? Like men, I told you, you should never argue with your wife. That's a new paradigm. If you have that paradigm, then any time you're about to argue, you'll stop. Right? Because it no longer fits within your paradigm of marriage. You just won't argue. You'll try to understand. That's a good paradigm, right? What do you think? Good paradigm? Yeah. If you don't have that paradigm, it's very easy to argue. Because you think, I'm the man, I'm right, she should do what I say. That paradigm will cause argumentation in a family. Guaranteed, right? I'm right, you do what I say, don't talk back, just listen, I'm the man. I wear the pants in the family, I make the decisions. That's going to create all kinds of problems. You see? But you change the paradigm. It's about us, it's about we decide together. I need to hear, what do you think about this? New paradigm? Right? So a lot of your problems in marriage are just because of your paradigms. And if you switch them, then you're okay. Yes. No.
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 So maybe it's
what do you
a,
what you mean is
think.
She's right even if she's wrong.
But then if the husband won't argue, then there will be no communication.
Yeah, okay. Let's get into this a little more because this is a good point. There's a joke. They say in philosophy, if a tree falls in a forest and nobody sees it fall, there's no one to verify it fall. So it fell. So a philosophical question is, did the tree actually fall? Because nobody saw it. So they say in philosophy, it's a philosophical question to ponder. If a tree falls in a forest and nobody sees it, did it actually fall? Because nobody knows it fell. So the joke is, if a man says something and his wife doesn't hear it, does it mean he's wrong? You didn't get it? Because the wife will always, the husband will say something, she'll always tell him he's wrong. So if he says everything he says, it, no, you're wrong. You're wrong. Well, maybe it's more American. Maybe it's not like that here. Anyway, I want to answer it in a couple dimensions, and then if I don't answer it completely, you can let me know. So, when we say a man should not argue with his wife, it doesn't mean she's right all the time. It just means that he has to accommodate her. That's what it means to a man, to be accommodated her. So maybe sometimes it's not right, but it's the best thing for the relationship. Now, to answer your second point, which is good, is that sometimes if things are wrong and there's conflict, you have to talk about them. Don't argue about them. I mean, you can use the word argue, but not scream and yell. But so, if you say, I think we should sell the house, now your husband's thinking, I can't accommodate this. We have to talk about this. This is important. But if you're just saying, I think I need to buy a new curtain for the bedroom, and he's like, okay, let's get it. Even though he doesn't think we need it, but he knows you want it, so he's not going to fight with you. He goes, okay, you know, just accommodate you. You'll be happy, and he'll be happy. So that's the sense. But if there is a problem in your marriage and you don't work it out and you're just silent, then the problem gets worse. So you should fight, quote unquote fight, about things which are important. There's a saying we have in America, choose your battles wisely. So if you're going to fight, I always tell couples, if you're going to fight about something that's worth fighting about. Like, you know, should our daughter go to school in South Africa or Mauritius or England? Okay, fight about that. That's something important, right? Should we move to South Africa, America, or stay in Mauritius? Fight about that, because that's a big decision. But fight about what color the curtains should be? It doesn't matter what color they are. The husband just goes, yeah, whatever color. You know, well, I like blue, and you say, well, I like orange. Okay, why don't we get a blue and orange? Oh, yeah, that could be good, you know. But ultimately, it shouldn't matter that much to him, as long as you're happy. So, it's so funny. So many couples tell me, they say, we always fight. And I say, about anything important? And they say, no. So think about all the fights you had. How many were about something important? Not many. But every fight was an acid in your relationship. Unless it was about something important that made a difference to improve your marriage. So if it's going to help your marriage, fight. Go for it. But if it's not, it's not worth it. And so the man will accommodate the woman, and he'll take his ground when he sees that something she wants, he really feels this is going to be a problem. But because he's not always fighting and disagreeing, when he disagrees, you think, whoa, he hasn't disagreed with me in 6 months. This must be important. Right? Wouldn't you feel that way? You know, you want to spend money on this or that. You make a new addition on the house or whatever. And he's thinking, no, this is, you know, we have to save money for something else. So now he stands his ground. And it'll have power. Because all the time he's accommodating you. So, does that make sense? Is that okay? One happy couple. Yeah. When we say argue in America, in a political sense, we mean discuss something from different points of view. We don't mean fight. It actually means a discussion. They call it in America, they call it debate. You know, in government, you debate something. But sometimes they'll use the word argue, but in a positive sense, in the sense of debating. All right, let's debate it. Let's hear it. Okay. Change your paradigm to something that's going to make your marriage work. If you don't, you're going to have trouble. If the one thing you got from this workshop is to change your paradigm, that will work miracles on your marriage. If you just got rid of a negative paradigm, replace it with a positive paradigm, you will find your marriage will work so much more easily, because a lot of times you're actually a good person and you have the capability of having a good relationship, but you have a bad paradigm. You know, you grew up and your father was telling you, women are useless, just, you know, whatever. You know, they're going to cheat on you if you don't put your foot down, you know. So that's the paradigm you entered your marriage with. And you're driving your wife crazy because you never trust her. Does that make sense? And it's all just because of one stupid paradigm you picked up. And if you just change it, everything's good. Yeah, okay.
I'm just talking about Srimad Bhagavatam that you are saying, because the spiritual masters, they are, I was surprised that everyone have heard about it, but I don't come to classes so much at ISKCON, that the masters, spiritual masters, they talk about what are the negative aspects of marriages. So in all cultures, we have the positive things and the negative things. So why is it that they concentrate so much crosses on negative things? This is one, because you mentioned yesterday that the real problem is that we are concentrating on our problems.
Yes, yes.
In fact, we should concentrate on our solutions. So this is a real problem. Why are they talking so much in crosses about...
One of the reasons is because... I can't speak for everybody. One of the reasons is there are verses in our scripture to talk about the pitfalls of materialistic life and materialistic household life. And there are a lot of men often in temples that are trying to maintain brahmacharya life. So in order to support them, they're pointing out the pitfalls or the difficulties or the realities of material life. You know, you have to... now you're a brahmacharya, your life is simple. If you want to get married, it'll be more complicated. Business, home, children, and so forth. So sometimes they're just pointing out realities. Sometimes they're sannyasis and they've made choices themselves. And they've seen the struggles of grihasthas, so they're saying, you know, this is what's going on. When Prabhupada talked about it, he always talked about both sides. These are the realities, And these are the positive aspects of what you can get. So I can't speak for everybody, but the majority of negative comments about Grihastha life will come from either people who had bad experiences with Grihastha life or renunciates who had no experience with it, who are just interpreting the verses according to their realization. And what a lot of those devotees don't realize is if they don't give a balanced presentation, it establishes negative paradigms in people's minds that become forces that undermine good marriages. And once they understand that, or if they come to realize that, they won't speak that way. But a lot of them innocently don't realize that because they were never married. But married people, when they hear those lectures, they think, this is not helping. This is not helping my marriage to hear this. I think a lot of them say that because they just lack the experience of Grihastha life. And they don't realize that it can have a negative effect. You can say, one sannyasi gave a class and he was talking about negativity, the negative things in Grihastha life, and he was talking about negative things about children. And one of the women who was raised in our movement, after he spoke, he said, I don't think it's healthy to speak that way. And he took offense because he had no experience. He didn't understand how it was creating a negative paradigm about family and children. He just had no experience with it. So he resisted her comment. And it wasn't nice. It created a very tense atmosphere. But I think one of my god sisters who teaches about family life and Grihastha life feels it's better sannyasis just don't talk about it because they don't have enough experience. As a general principle, it's better they don't. That's her opinion, because there's always the chance they'll say something which will not be the right thing. Although they may say many right things, but if they say one wrong thing, it can be damaging. So that's some people's opinion. And I think more and more people are realizing we have to be balanced and realizing the positive nature of Grihastha ashram. Anyway, I can't speak for everyone, but, you know, the verses are there in the Bhagavatam, so they're speaking and they're quoting the verses, so they're not making things up. But as I said, it's talking about material life. Is that okay? Something?
Yeah, the verses are in the Srimad Bhagavatam, but when devotees are talking, they should be careful that they are not giving their own interpretations.
Yeah, or their own impression.
Yeah, we have authorities in the ISKCON movement. You have Srila Prabhupada was interpreted it. So why you interpret it in a different way? And giving your own point of view.
Because everybody sees the world through their subjective.
So we know that
viewpoint.
Most of the time, our own interpretations of the scriptures is really not the right interpretation.
Okay, so if I give a class and I say, I was married and my marriage didn't work out. So my perspective on marriage is pretty negative. So if I give a class on this verse, you're probably going to hear a lot of negatives. So just understand it's my subjective reality. Okay, then everyone will say, okay, he's negative because he had a bad relationship. Maybe he wasn't meant to be married. Maybe it was the wrong thing. So if you understand that, okay, that's okay. And that's honest. And he can say, I'm not saying this is true for everyone. This is my experience. It's a broad topic. Anyone who wants to get a master's degree could do their master's degree on why the Hare Krishnas have so much negativity about marriage. And they could answer your question more thoroughly than I can. Now I want to conclude this portion. We have 45 minutes. I want to do an exercise. And this exercise, I really need you to fully participate in this exercise. So we'll just give you a minute to sit next to, find a partner if you're not next to your partner, because we're going to be discussing. So everyone move around to be sitting next to somebody, because you're going to be discussing a very important question with somebody. And then when we're ready, I'll tell you what we're going to be discussing. Kiridhari, you want to help anybody find a partner? Raise your hand if you're not next to somebody and need a partner. Anyone else need a partner? You get what? Oh. Okay. Shh. Are we still awake, breathing, alive? Attention? Attention? How do you say attention? Attention. See, I spent a month in Mexico in October, and that like destroys my French. In Creole, because it's like, it's similar, but it's like every time I try to talk not in English, I speak Spanish now, even though I'm trying to do French. Attention, s'il vous plaît. Merci beaucoup. So, nous avons une question. How do you know? Conocer? What's wrong with you? Well, this exercise will help you realize what's wrong with you. How many of you want to find out what's wrong with you? Arrivo! There's nothing I'd rather do than find out what's wrong with me. I can't wait. Okay, so you're going to answer this question. This is what you're going to discuss with your partner. And this is a little heavy, but it's going to help you. What would you not like about being married to yourself? So you have to imagine you're now married to yourself with all your weirdness and idiosyncrasies and habits and whatever makes you you. And you have to tell your partner what you wouldn't like. The next two questions are elaborations. Would you want your son to marry a woman exactly like you? If not, what would you not like about her? Men, would you want your daughter to marry a man just like you? If not, what would you not like about him? So you don't have to be married to answer this question. You just have to imagine. So the second and third question are just different angles of looking at the first question. It's really the first question from another perspective. So now, how many of you want to leave right now before we do the exercise? Okay, lock the doors, everyone. They're starting to run out. Okay, so why are we doing this exercise? Why do we want to? Because you remember yesterday we were talking about the way to improve a marriage is to improve yourself. That's where you want to focus. So I want to bring the focus on you and what you contribute to a relationship. So even if you're not married, you can answer this question. And then, after you answer the question, part two, there's two parts, is tell your partner what you need to do to start working on this problem, how you can deal with it, change it, improve it. What can you do when you realize, I'm a fanatic, I'm narrow-minded, I have to be right about everything. Whatever it is you realize you're like, that you wouldn't like if you were married to someone, then you discuss, what are you going to do about it now that you realize it? Is that clear? Anyone have any questions? basically, what's wrong with you and what are you going to do about it? Specifically in terms of, there may be many things wrong with us, but specifically in terms of having a relationship with yourself. Maybe you have a bad memory, that doesn't impede the relationship, so you don't have to list that. It's all, what wouldn't you like about having a relationship with yourself? How do you like that question? You would never ask this question of yourself, would you? No. It's only if you come to a workshop and we lock the doors and say, you can't get out unless you show me your answers, would you ever do this? But you'll find it very helpful. So does anyone have any question of what we're doing? Is anybody not clear? Okay. Yes. So you imagine you woke up tomorrow morning to find out the person laying next to you was you in the opposite sex. Carbon copy. They did everything you do. That was you. Like in your case, you wake up the next morning and find out somebody is laying in bed. It's you as a woman. And she does exactly what you do. She thinks like you. She eats like you. She works like you. She talks like you. She has all your beliefs, all your habits. What wouldn't you like about her? Wouldn't like the fact that she has a beard. Okay. She doesn't have a beard. In terms of her character, her behavior, her strangeness, her habits, what wouldn't you like? Because when you realize that, then you realize if you're married or you're going to be married, those are the things you need to work on out of service and affection to your spouse, because those are the things that are probably difficult for them to deal with. Right? Maybe you're really introverted and you never talk to your wife. So now you're married to a woman who never talks to you. Right? Or you always tell her what to do and she forgets. You just have to be real. And once you do the exercise, then you discuss with your partner, okay, these are the things I need to work on, and this is how I'm going to do it. This is how I can change. This is how I can improve. This is just bringing awareness to something that might be upsetting to your partner or potential partner. Are you ready to face yourself? Bold is the man who does not run away from his own reflection. Don't run away from yourself. anyone need more time? Now raise your hand if you need more time. How much more? 2 minutes? Minutes? Minute? Minute? 2 minutes? Okay. 2 minutes, mas. More. 2 minutes plus? Plus. Plus. 2 minutes plus. D'accord? Okay. Anyone discover anything useful? Anybody discover anything that they think by changing will make an improvement in their marriage? Nobody? Only one. What about the rest of you? Two, three, four. Okay. So who would like to share what they discovered? Yes, we have a microphone. Yes, Prabhu.
Hare Bol. I've just noted four points, which hopefully I will try to train to change.
Did your wife agree on those 4 points?
Yeah. I think so.
Okay, good. We're making progress.
I have some irregularity in some particular works.
Irregularity in?
Some particular works at home. To do some particular works at home.
Okay.
Not regular to do that particular okay. works. And this is very often.
Right, you say you're going to do it and you don't do it?
I say to do it and afterwards I don't do it.
Okay.
I just postpone it. Or later, okay. later, and when it okay. is very urgent, then I jump and do it immediately. Otherwise, postpone always.
Okay.
And secondly, I wait till the last day to pay my bill. And at times, very often, I have to pay fine. And so I just neglect the bill at times. Though I have the finance at times to pay, I just neglect it.
Okay.
Yeah. And then anger control. At times...
you get angry.
I get out of my control.
Lose control.
For that anger. And that, of course, harms the whole family,
yes.
the kids. And definitely it has some negative effects on the kids.
For sure, yes.
Yeah.
That was three, right? You have one more?
Yeah, one thing more is that similar to the first one, but at times I just escape from some particular works.
Escaping. Oh, don't want to face some problem.
I don't want to face to do that particular work.
You know what's really good to do? Once you get your points, then you imagine how acting that way affects the other people. That's the culmination of this exercise. Okay, I am like this. Now let me imagine how other people are being affected by it. It becomes a real impetus to change. Like you're realizing that, right? How it's disturbing. So when you go home tonight, meditate on these points and how they're affecting people in your family or people at work. Very good. Thank you for being honest.
Thank you.
Who else would like to share?
So, I would not like to be married to Mrs. Me because she's an artist and she daydreams a lot. And sometimes she, even when we're walking together, she would daydream and walk all by herself.
Not present.
Sometimes not present. Although maybe not intentionally wanting to harm me or disturb me, but yeah.
She lives in another universe.
Yeah, it can be annoying sometimes.
Thank you. And what are you going to do about it? Practice Buddhism to learn to be present?
I'll walk slower and I'll have to answer when questions are posed to me.
Yeah. Creative people are, you know, they get creative anytime, any place. Especially when they're walking, right? I was in Mexico and there's a park near the temple. And I was, every morning we would walk and I'd get so many ideas while I was walking. It was crazy. Okay, who's next? Who would like to share? And how does that impact your partner? How do you imagine?
She can give you a few examples.
You have to give them.
No, there's one example, but we were in reunion one time and I was daydreaming 10 meters ahead of her it wasn't that far. And she was behind me, and she fell and broke her arm, and I didn't realize. I continued walking.
Oh my God!
I got a whole mouth full of it. Yeah. So we had to catch the plane. It was on the way to catch the plane anyway. So.
Wow.
Yeah.
Amazing.
And I'm still. That was how many years ago? And I'm still coming up.
Yeah. Amazing. Thank you. Still walking 10 feet ahead dreaming, huh? Well, if you made a lot of money with your dreaming, she'd be okay, right? You know, you came up with these masterpieces, you know, 10 million rupee masterpieces. She'd be like, keep dreaming. I like it. But, you know, if that's not working, then, you know. Who else would like to share? Something they discovered about themselves. If you want to practice humility, then humility means to admit some fault you have. So this is a good opportunity. By sharing, it'll help you practice humility. Because otherwise we're trying to hide behind a mask so everybody thinks we have no faults. Yes?
I am not someone that is very constant in what I do.
Steady,
yes. A lot of time I start things, I don't finish them.
Oh, okay.
Maybe it's a question of personal trust or something, but I need to work on it.
Yeah.
I would like to be married to someone like that.
I have the same problem. I used to have the same problem. You want to know what I did?
Yeah.
I realized I wasn't focused. And so I only worked on it the part that was fun, but the part that wasn't fun, which was the end, I just would go on to the next thing and have all these projects and nothing finished. It was a lot, for me, part of it was a lack of focus. It was just prioritizing, and not, I had too many things in my life, so I could jump to 20 things. So I had to minimize what I was doing, and automatically they got done. Because you only have so much time, so now I have enough time to do everything, so they got done. Isn't that cool? I'm getting more done now. I have a book, it's almost ready. We just designed the cover. Wow. So things are happening. Anyway, it's a thought, you know. Streamline and focus. Okay, who else would like to share? One more, number five.
This is just a realizations.
Okay.
A few times it happens to me that in I pray or I beg preferably to give me that post or give me that chance that in my next burst I never get married.
Your next birth, you won't get married.
I don't want to get married. But unfortunately,
how does your wife feel about that?
I never told her that. Now she's in. Because
wait, I have to interrupt you because this is a really good question to ask your wife or husband. In your next life, if you got married, would you marry me? And you want to bring your marriage to the point where you say yes. But I can relate to what you're saying. I feel the same way. Nothing to do with my wife, but...
Yeah.
And why, in your next life, you don't want to get married?
Because I previously said that I should be an expert to deal with all these problems.
Oh, okay.
Which I am not, and yeah. This is very suffering. But unfortunately, in this life, after realizing this, I get trapped again. In the same life itself because of my desires.
Yeah. Well, the point is you shouldn't do anything if you don't know how to do it. But I don't think that's a good reason not to marry because you don't know how to do it. But because you're detached. Because if you're not detached, you'll get married anyway even if you don't know how to do it. Right? That's the way it works. But you're going back to Godhead. So you might be married there, but it's not like being married here. Prabhupada wrote me a letter. I was 24 and I said, Prabhupada, can I take sannyas? I had a one-year-old son. He was 1 year old. And I said, this household life is just too much trouble. Can I take sannyas? And Prabhupada said, I will not give sannyas to anyone who first doesn't become responsible as a grihastha. So, it's a nice meditation to think, I need to succeed in the grihastha ashram. That will please Prabhupada. So I need to learn to do it and succeed. And when I succeed and when I'm older, then I'll become qualified to leave it or become vanaprastha. But first, succeed. It's very important. We have a principle and it goes like this. You succeed by failing. And what it means is you try to succeed in your life at the expense of your health or your family or your wife or something. So you end up succeeding by failing, which is what we don't want to do. You understand? I'm very successful in my career. How did you do it? By failing in my marriage. I don't spend any time, so I succeeded by failing. And I had to fail in my marriage to succeed. It's a paradox. So you want to succeed in your marriage, succeed in your work, succeed in your health, succeed in your finances. You want to succeed everywhere. Otherwise, you succeed by failing. Okay. I fail here to succeed up here. Doesn't make sense. So become an ideal grihastha. That's what Prabhupada wants. Learn how to do it. then you can do it. If I can do it, you can do it. Believe me. Anyone else like to share? Yes. We have a microphone up here.
Usually when I'm angry, I give the silent treatment to people.
Oh, you just go silent, yeah.
Yes.
For how long? How long you go silent?
4 days also.
1 day? 4 days?
1 day.
1 day, yeah, okay.
I trust too easily.
And what?
I trust people too easily.
Trust.
Yes.
Oh, you don't trust people.
I trust people too.
Too much.
Yes.
Well, that's a fault. You get into trouble.
Yes.
Too much trust.
Exactly.
Okay.
I procrastinate too much. Procrastinating.
Oh, procrastinating. Yes. Okay.
I'm also carefree sometimes.
Carefree?
Yes.
Careless.
Carefree.
Carefree.
Yes.
I guess there's a difference. So how do you think that affects people that you're dealing with?
I have mood swings, so I guess it
not stable emotionally.
People, yeah.
So they don't know how you're going to feel.
They don't know how I will react.
Yeah, that's not good.
Mm.
If you want to be married, are you married or you want to be?
I want to be.
Yeah, it's not good if you want to be married.
My mom always said.
You really need to work on that. It'll be really hard for a man. Because he'll come home and you'll be angry and he won't know why. Gentlemen, I have something to tell you. Sometimes your wife will get upset with you and you don't know why. You don't know what you did, but it's what you didn't do that she's upset with. Yes? I don't know, I didn't do anything wrong. No, but you didn't do something. Okay. Anyone else dying to share? This is all good realizations, but we need to work on these. Not just be aware, but we have to work on them. We'll have one last sharing, and then we can, I think, stop. Anybody dying to tell us how bad they are? One more. Save the best for last. Where's the microphone? Who wants the microphone? Participate, everybody. We need your participation. Someone who hasn't spoken. One more, please. You've already spoken. No. Yeah, somebody else. Good. We have one more. Okay.
I would just say patience, lack of patience.
And how can you improve? What can you do? Why do you think you're not patient?
Because in some, I'm doing something and I want result. I want immediate result.
Oh,
I cannot
okay.
wait. And I'm being impatient, then I'm going to drop and just...
Why do you think you're like that?
I'm too young. Perhaps with maturity and all, it's going to come.
Sounds like there's something in there that's making you believe you have to get everything done right away. Like, did you used to be slow at things and your parents told you, go fast?
No.
Your teachers?
No.
Think about it. Okay, anyway. How can we help her become patient? What would you tell her to become more patient? What? Become a mother and you'll...
Become a mother and you'll learn tolerance and patience.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Patience is about, it's about control. What I can control. What I can accept that I can't control. That's all. It's just about acceptance. Okay. I think we can end now. So thank you all for coming. I hope you learned something today that you can apply immediately in your family. What time do we start tomorrow? Till what time? Okay. And what time is prasadam? So tomorrow's 9:30. In case you don't know what time 9:30 is, I'll explain. Everybody listen. Every minute we spend here, we can do more work. So if you come late, then we lose a few things we could have discussed. So 9:30 is when one hand's on the 9 and the other on the 30. Okay, I want to make sure you understand that. And that's when you're supposed to be here, not the time you're on the highway. Okay? 9:30 is when you're supposed to be sitting in the chair. And to be sitting in the chair at 9:30, you have to be parking your car at 9:25 at the latest, right? So then you have to calculate how long it's going to take you to get here so you know what time you have to leave to be here. Okay? Can we do that? Is that possible?
Okay. On the way out, there are Prabhu's CDs. Please,
yeah. So everybody buy all my CDs. I want to go home with no CDs. And you'll love them and you'll benefit tremendously. Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.